Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Bing bong, bing bong. Welcome, welcome. Yada, 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 yada. Welcome, welcome. Hello, hello. Check, check. This is what I sound like. The levels look normal. How do you sound when you talk?
Riff raff, street rat. I don't buy that. If only they'd look closer.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY TO WIN 5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about cards we like in CEDH. You got a list. I have some in my head. We're going to talk about some of them.
Because cards in CEDH are what makes CEDH CEDH.
Boom, there you go. Some of them will be roughly related to some of the Spider-Man decks that we recently played or are playing coming up soon. I'm not sure on the schedule.
I think it'll be coming up soon.
Okay, cool.
Because we just recorded with these decks this past weekend.
Got it.
Next week's podcast is going to be our official set review for the Spider-Man episode, because I think today, as of recording, is the day that we got all of the cards.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at the final list yet.
No, I haven't, because it's still the morning. Like, it's still really early.
Let's save that Spider-Man stuff for next week, then, and this week is all the cards that we're talking about that are not in Spider-Man.
Exactly. So hold your horses or your spiders, and we're going to talk about some fun cards in CEDH. But you know what's going to be really funny is that we're going to talk about cards that are coming up in the Avatar set instead.
Nice. Yeah, throw them for a loop. Which way are we going? You don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know. And that's the exact thing that Watsy's decided to do too with their spoiler seasons.
Honestly, the way that it looked for me, once the card is spoiled, it's out. The set review is the end of the set. And I feel like this is a major difference from when we were like 10 years ago, Magic was, right?
Yeah, I would watch a set review on YouTube 10 years ago before I started doing content. And that would be how I would introduce myself to a set. But I feel like now I'm doing the limited resources sunset review.
Exactly.
At the end of the set.
Because the sets are like so back to back, we're getting spoilers for the next one before this one comes out. That now,
is this flickering due to batteries?
It is flickering. Yeah, look at that.
Oh, fuck.
It's a very spooky episode.
I'll get that in a second. The way that it was before, there was like build up and hype to the set, and the set was out for 3 months and there was no new cards added. So that whole 3 months, everyone was learning about the set, at least from a standard perspective and from a limited perspective, which is how I was mainly enjoying the game many, many years ago when Innistrad first came out. You were like learning the set as you were playing it, as you were doing it. But now we're learning the set through spoilers in the weeks ahead. We're learning about the set and we're like experiencing it through spoilers, kind of. And then also because of Wii's proxy and its CD, as soon as it's officially spoiled by Wizards, we can just play the card.
It's fair game. I guess, although people don't do that in CEDH tournaments. Like, I haven't show up in CEDH tournaments, but in our casual pods, like, as far as I'm concerned, if we had a guest on the channel who said, hey, I just happened to put Cabbage Merchant in this deck already,
hell yeah,
I'd be super happy with
that.
Yeah.
But now, once the set comes out, in my mind, then now the set's over. The set came out. I was able to buy it, and then that's the ending, and now we can think about the next
set. And it goes by so quickly that, like, we will, of course, miss cards in the set review, but that's because, well, A, by the time we're sunsetting the set, we haven't even had the chance to play it yet.
Right.
And B, there's just so many cards coming out, it's impossible to get all of them, right?
Right, yeah. So. And they've actually, I think, like, talked a little bit. I think I may be misquoting Mark when he said this. Rosewater. That's his name, right? Oh man, yeah. Don't include that. I know his name.
Mark Hamill. Which one?
I think he said something to the effect of that they like the fact that players will not know all of the cards all of the time. It's impossible to keep up, and that's okay. That's kind of like, that's magic. You're not going to know everything. It's impossible to know everything, so you're going to discover stuff. And I think, I actually kind of like that. I think that's cool.
You know, when you put it that way, that is always keeping magic intriguing too, and that's like, the completionist in me hates that.
Right.
But at the same time, like, that will always make magic feel exciting and new, and it will never get old and bored.
Right, because there's so many stuff, and there's so many cards that, like, are nothing when they come out, and then years later, other cards come out, and it makes those cards really good. That's also happening all the time. So I think it is impossible to keep up, but I think that's good, and we're going to talk about an avatar card now.
Exactly. Do you know how you help keep up? You watch Play to Win podcast, and you listen to us talk about the Cabbage Merchant, who is awesome.
I'm going to switch these batteries, as you say what the card does.
That sounds good, yeah. So the Cabbage Merchant is 2 and a green. This is from the Avatar set, but not the main set. It's going to be from the Eternal set, which is more like an intro to Magic set, I think, that they're doing. I don't know. This set's so far away already. But it's a legendary creature human citizen that's a 2/2, and it says, whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, you create a food token, and whenever a creature deals combat damage to you, you sacrifice a food token, but you can tap 2 untapped foods you control to add 1 mana of any color.
This card, I think, is good.
I think it's really good too. So I've been kind of comparing it to Lotho in the sense that every 2 spells nets you 1 mana.
Roughly.
But instead, it's kind of repeatable mana instead of a treasure you can only use once. But in theory, you can only use it once because if you get hit with damage, you're going to have to sacrifice one of the foods.
Yeah.
So, like, it kind of balances itself out a little bit, I think.
I think Lotho is a pretty good comparison. Rather than that 1 damage that you take each time you make a treasure, instead you incentivize the entire table to attack you, which is like kind of bad and lame. Other times there will be situations where you're like, I'm not doing anything with my life total. It's just a treasure. You should still attack the Necro player, but it's going to give the table a free incentive to attack you because it puts you down on mana. That part I don't like about it.
Well, I think it's whenever a creature deals combat damage to you, which I think means that each creature individually is its own trigger, which means that if an opponent hits you with 3 creatures, each one of them makes you sacrifice a food. So I think it's a little bit scarier than just like what a Tim the text would read, where like it's 1 food per player or something
like that. Right, yeah, so there's a real chance that like it does nothing. Now, if you they have to deal the combat damage to you. So
they have to deal the damage,
If you have blockers, how big is this thing?
This is a 2/2.
So not good, but it can still block the 1/1s fine. And if you have other blockers, this could be okay.
And a lot of people don't want to trade their attacker. I think Timna players might want to threaten you with this, but I don't think it's ultimately worth losing Timna over something that's like kind of sometimes going to be mana advantage, especially if you're already playing Timna. You probably have like a flyer that can also get in for something too.
Yeah, exactly. It's also important to, I guess, like note that this is monocolored, not 2-colored for Lotho, so it's easier to cast, kind of, although it's 3 mana rather than 2, so harder to cast in another way.
But easier to cast in some other ways.
Right, and it's also a legend, so if Sisse is interested in another legend that can make mana, I don't know. I maybe this is a Sisse card. I'm not really positive. It's got a high upside. It has the potential to be kind of crazy. If Sisse is out and it's out, your opponents can't go through an infinite storm loop, right? Because you'll make infinite foods along the way and can search your library for shit. Is that true?
Yeah, whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, you create a food. So that would mean that every 10 spells is a Sisse activation for free.
And like for a lot of Sisse decks can like, maybe they can probably make that work, or at least stop you from continuing on after something like that. So
can you imagine playing against like a Vivi or a Ral, then like you have this in play?
Like that's kind of interesting that it acts as like kind of a stacks piece in against certain wins, but also it's like a mana engine. Like that, maybe that's pretty good.
And those kind of decks typically can't deal you combat damage very well. And if they can, it's not with many creatures over a wide board.
I wonder if there's an argument you can make with your table, like, hey, leave my foods around because it stops the other player from going for a win. Because if they go for it, I'll be able to make treasures and stop them. They can't go for it as long as this is out. Like, don't get rid of my treasures for me.
That's kind of interesting.
I wonder.
Yeah. So, like, you can use it as a political tool against your weakness, which is Timna decks, so that they don't over-attack you.
Right, yeah.
And then that way you can still leave up all of your advantage.
You can say like, hey, I have a silence for player B, but if you attack me and I sack a food, I can't cast it. Leave it. Like, leave my food around, right?
Yeah, that's kind of nice
and
to
in
have.
A tournament,
yeah.
You'd be able to like show them, like, hey, I have this. I would like to cast it. Please don't make me sacrifice
a
thing.
So what's the deck that this goes in then is my question. Because yeah. Like...
Sisse maybe. But I say that a lot. Anytime there's a decent legend that makes mana, I go Sisse maybe. And I think that's what Sisse is,
but
right?
I mean, this could be like, could we compare this to Tataru too?
Maybe, yeah.
Because this is better than Tataru Taru. You get access to the mana right away. Like, it's not tapped foods. If they give you two spells, that is one mana you get right away. I think I'd rather have that than a tapped one.
Is there any deck that like is already making foods on an accident? Because the foods themselves are bad. They're nothing. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
But this makes it so that foods tap for treasures. I can't really think of anything. I know like Academy, what's the...
Academy Manufacturer.
I know there's like Lannis, you know what I mean?
But Lannis is clues, like he investigates. But a lot of stuff, like a lot of the cards in that deck though are like Jahira that let your clues just like tap for mana. And this just kind of like, it's like a worse Jahira, but Jahira doesn't make the clues for itself or make the tokens for itself. Yeah. It just lets the tokens tap for green.
It also... Separate from CDH, I always talk to you about my casual deck that I want to build that's an artifact deck with no artifacts in it, and it's all legendary creatures
this
that make artifact tokens.
For that.
And this is so good in that like dream deck that every time I see a new legend, I'm like, oh, that'd be good.
This makes me wish I had Glissa the Trader back.
Oh,
because
sure.
You just make a bunch of artifacts that you can sacrifice, and then you have Glissa. No one wants to attack you because you have Glissa.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ha! Huh.
I don't know for CDH. We don't have to give this one a rating because this isn't a set review. We're not talking about the Avatar sets.
You're right. We're just telling you about cool cards that we like in CEDH right now.
Yeah. And then other than that, what other decks besides Sisse could play something like this? I really don't. It doesn't work with Kinnan, right? How is it worded? Does it work with Kinnan?
No, it's not. It's like Relic of Legends text. Relic of Legends. You have to tap the food. The food itself is not tapping.
It doesn't
to
gain
add
the ability.
Mana. Correct.
To, okay.
Yeah.
Just you tap it. Okay.
So is this a Thrasios Timna card?
Maybe.
Where you can build your own board that's not getting attacked into while still only needing to commit three of your creatures to attack for maximum Timna value. And this also can get you long-term Thrasios activations.
True. Works great with Seedborn Muse.
That's also true. Yeah. Maybe I mean, Thrasios? I feel like I do like it better in a deck that can make more... foods.
A deck that has a mana sink sounds good, right? Because what this is going to do is make a ton of extra mana, and you want something to do with that mana?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
I just really wish that something Marnius was in these colors, or this was in Marnius colors.
Yeah.
But
there might be a commander that we're not thinking about that can really use the token aspect of this better. You know what I mean? If there's something like, Marnius is a perfect example of just like making that token draws you a card, that's crazy. If there's another card outside of Marnius in green that can help with that, then I think you really want something like
that. Would be because all the other tokens, like Benny Brax is another white card that I would think of.
So maybe you can fit those cards together in the 99 of another deck that I can't think of right now.
Green white Sisse
because
you just lean into untap.
This card I'm looking at, it's a card that looks like Lotho. I think it's going to be similar to Tataru Taro. I'm just not sure if the attacking thing is going to be too bad of a restriction. You know
that's
what I mean?
My biggest issue with it too. But I think if your deck is built to not be attacked too much.
Built
to
block a little.
And you can politic your way into staying damage free. Yeah. I think it can be a really strong mana engine for decks with sinks.
The more I think about it, like Sisse, I'm not really attacking a ton with Sisse, and Sisse can often be kind of big, you know what I mean? She can clog up the board. Like, so
you are trying to operate at instant speed a lot of the time in that deck, so you just leave up stuff a lot.
And the more I think about like the fact that like when it and Sisse is out, like opponents can't cast too many spells because you're going to give me a Sisse activation. Like sometimes like you'll know I only need one more, so you can't cast down creatures because I'll be able to win as soon as you cast
it. It's like a weird deafening silence in that way. So I think as long as you're making it so that you're getting two foods to one attack, I think you're in a good shape. Plus, a lot of decks aren't the threat in that way. Like, if you don't play Ad Nauseam in your Cabbage Merchant deck, I don't think you have to worry about getting attacked as much.
That's like in Sisse. Again, man, everything comes back to Sisse. I'm not using my Life Toll at all. There's no reason to attack me ever. I mean, technically, I guess the One Ring is in the deck. Like, there's, you know what I mean? But there's nothing else that uses my Life Toll in my version of Sisse, at least. Like,
is this an Itali card?
Huh. No.
If I have a way to get out on turn one off of like something, do you think there's going to be like an ancient tomb and like
how much
Chromox?
Rhystic Study at max, I assume, draws you three cards a turn cycle until it draws you way
this
more.
This is not an Natalia
This
card.
Is a mana and a half
no,
a turn.
No, this the Evendo Brush Razor we were talking about the other week would be better.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
because that's guaranteed. That doesn't have any kind of a drawback. And Atali can have situations where you can get attacked.
I think this is better in a deck that wants to go a little bit slower. Because
longer,
longer. It's going to make 1 to 2 mana worth of foods a turn cycle, which isn't really a ton, but it will add up if you push the game really long, and it's going to slow your opponents down. It's going to make them go, maybe I can hold on to my Lotus Petal just right now so I don't give... Probably not, though. They're not going to give a shit. They're just going to get... It's a food.
They don't give a shit about Lotho,
right? They're not going to care about the first one because it doesn't make a mana yet.
Yeah, weirdly enough... People don't care about giving you treasures unless they have enough mana to pay for your smothering
tithe.
Yeah,
no one cares about Lotho. You have
no
it, whatever,
one cares
right?
about Lotho, yeah.
So yeah, they're going to give you a bunch of foods, especially because the raid is bad.
They'll think that they can attack you, and right. they'll never attack
and they'll forget, and they'll attack somebody
Dude,
else.
Dude, do you know how many times I forget to attack?
Fun. Yeah, CDH players hate attacking.
Yeah, really.
The more I talk about this card, I think the more I like it, but it looked to me kind of bad at first, but the more I think about it, the more I think maybe.
It's
going to
perform, I think, better than it reads because of you being a player and everyone else being humans. I think just like the way that CEDH games go, this will end up getting you more value than you might think it does on your initial read of the card.
Yeah, that's true. Rhystic, I average, gives you 3 cards a turn because normally someone can pay for a spell. Realistically, there's probably 4 or 5 spells that are getting cast in a turn cycle that aren't from you,
but they can't pay to prevent this. Like they have to just not it cast gets,
yeah,
them
exactly,
to...
and they're not going to do that. They're not going to like. What am I? Yeah, like the more I'm thinking about, like I'll just hold my Lotus Petal for next turn. You're going to get it next turn. What's the difference?
That's the thing. Like you're always gonna get.
I'd still rather you have a food than a Rhystic Study come down between now and my next turn, and then now I have to give you a food and somebody else a card. That's
I
worse.
I will always opt for that instead of the potential for a Rhystic Study to come down and make it worse in the future.
So the attacking thing is potentially bad. The potential of, like, sometimes it'll do nothing, but, like, it stays around forever. So even if it doesn't do anything on that first turn cycle, as long as you're not turbo, who cares? It made 1 food. All right, next turn, it'll probably make 2 foods. And then after that, it might make 3 foods. And then you have 6 mana turn cycle or extra, whatever. I don't know. It'll get out of control quickly.
Dude, and then a counter war goes off, and then you untap with, like, 20 foods. And then you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe this.
And if you're in that, like, engine world where you have a Rhystic Study and also a Mirror Maid and something like that, and you're drawing cards every stack, well, now, every time they cast a spell, not only do you draw cards, but you make the mana that you can cast the cards that you're drawing. So, like, that's how Kinnan wins a lot of those wars, is Kinnan makes a shitload of mana. So if we're going to have a counter war where we're both drawing cards over everything that we cast, I have 10 mana and you have 5, so I can cast more of the spells.
Yeah.
This is going to give you a similar feeling, maybe?
It's such a shame that this is green. Like, it's such a shame that this is a green card.
If it was an Esper Colors, holy shit,
it would be absolutely cracked. But I understand it being green. I think flavorfully, this card is phenomenal too.
We didn't even talk about the fact that
cabbages and of course funny. When he's damaged he loses his cabbages and they go everywhere.
It is like, really flavorful.
It is so it turns out we're actually getting extra Avatar the Last Airbender lore with this, because we actually get to learn how good of a merchant this guy is.
He is selling
he sells a lot of cabbages. He gets a lot of cabbages and can push a lot of
cabbages. That's why he's always losing so many. It's such a big deal when he loses his cabbages.
Steal,
this is so many.
The cabbages are his corn.
Yeah,
it's how he feeds his family.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, I love this card. I don't know, but I think it'll be good.
Love the card as a card. Yeah. We'll see how much
we'll
I love it.
Good.
In CEDH,
we'll see how good. As always, I'm a little hesitant, of course, because CDH is a very high ceiling and the cards are very good. But
I normally hate new cards. Yeah. So
let's talk about the next one.
All right. So the next one, let's talk about another Avatar card from the same Eternal set, which is Katara Waterbending Master.
Which doesn't have waterbending, the keyword.
Does not have waterbending, which is very weird.
That's weird to me.
Me too. But for 1 and a blue, you get a 1/3 human warrior ally that's a legendary creature. And whenever you cast a spell during an opponent's turn, you get an experience counter. And whenever Katara attacks, you may draw a card for each experience counter you have. And if you do, discard a card.
Yeah. You have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah. So this reminds me of cards like Mercurial Spell Dancer.
Yeah.
This reminds me of a lot of other attempts that Wizards has made at this kind of creature that does really well in casual. people and we try out in CEDH for a little bit and I think ultimately don't end up getting there in the long run.
It's the waiting for me.
It's the waiting. It's the waiting. Yeah, I feel like I've said this a lot on the show recently, but cards that make you play them, have summoning sickness, and then force you to attack before you get anything, way too late before you get any value.
And like the obvious reason because of that is because now everyone can hold up removal and ping off your thing or something, but also it gives everyone information before the information manifests. Does that make sense? It tells everyone you're about to draw six cards, but you haven't drawn them yet. So you're a threat before you have the ability to protect yourself.
But you also need to feed Katara before she's card advantage, right?
Right.
So you start off with no experience counters, and then you force of will someone, and you are now down three cards for Katara to have one experience counter.
It's whenever you cast the...
you cast a spell during an opponent's turn, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I've essentially, in this scenario right here, put three cards into getting one experience for Katara, so now I can have card selection as she loots, and now I need to, like, find another spell, like a Swords to Plowshares or something on someone else's turn again before she's actual card advantage for me.
It also incentivizes you to interact early when you don't really necessarily need to, but just because you want to get experience counters on her, which I think sucks, because what you end up doing is wasting precious counter spells on things that don't really matter because you want to get card advantage, and then a savvy pilot is going to know, oh, you just cast Force of Will and you're tapped out. Probably pretty low likelihood that you have another free counter spell right now. I would just push in a situation that otherwise I may have tried to gain value instead. You haven't accumulated the resources to draw yet that this card has promised you, so you
can't. Because you haven't gone to your turn. Yeah, like, sure, you were able to get yourself some experience, but like, wow, that's not helpful until you have a turn.
I do want to say, Tyler's not here to defend this card. Tyler does like this card a lot. He's been brewing and he thinks it's really good. Tyler's a great player and he wins a lot of games. So we could be very wrong about this, but for me, this card doesn't really fit my playstyle, and it's for the reasons that I mentioned, it's not one that I'm particularly interested in.
But if there's other ways that you can get experience counters, like there was a whole other commander set that dealt with that. Yeah, and Proliferate's a whole mechanic that means that you don't have to dedicate so much to pumping Katara up, like, manually the way that the card wants you to. Like, we have thousands of cards that can potentially break Katara here.
Right,
So I think there's going to be some stuff that will allow this to end up being a little bit better than it just reads to. Like, I think she's got the cabbage merchant thing going on where, like, you can build around this a little bit differently, and then that way she is going to be a little bit more impactful. So if on the first time you attack, she draws you three and you discard one, that seems really good to me.
That's true. Yeah, and then I could understand how it could get out of control pretty quickly.
And then this with, like, the Flux Channeler, the thing that proliferates whenever you cast a non-creature spell.
Yeah.
Like, that just means that you get two experience counters every single time that you counter something or just cast a cantrip, like a consider on someone's turn.
It's getting hard to tell the difference between Bracket 4 and Bracket 5 CEDH sometimes, I feel like.
Because all CEDH commanders are Bracket 4 and 5, but some of them are just bad CEDH decks.
Basically, yes. Well, this is I think, our shared philosophy at this point, is that all commander decks are CEDH decks, just some of them are bad CEDH decks. The cards are getting better and better and better and better, so all of the brackets are getting closer and closer and closer and closer to what CEDH is, right?
All of the brackets, like Bracket 3 and 2 and 1?
I guess maybe probably Bracket 1 and 2 are specifically worded out at this point to not be powerful. I think powerful cards still get into those brackets, though, and make the overall brackets stronger, right?
That's true. In general, I feel like, and maybe this was just my experience, but I feel like I powered up my decks because of the bracket system.
In some ways I didn't. But yeah, keep going.
I've heard a lot of people that did not have that experience. And like, they realized that they should just cut Ancient Tomb and now their deck's a Bracket 3 or something. Yeah. I was already not on any of those other bracketed cards. And now I just kind of felt like, okay, well, this tells me the cards that I now have to ban from my decks. And like, I can now play more Hermit Druid and lean into Hermit Druid if I want to in my casual Disa deck if I want to and not feel bad about it.
In most of my casual decks, I ended up taking out the few game changers that I did have, which wasn't very much, but like Vilas did have a Necropotence that I took out. In other decks like AC, I think AC plays Crop Rotation and, oh fuck, what's the land?
Oh, Glacial Chasm.
Glacial Chasm, which I believe both of those are game changers.
They are, yeah.
And I have decided that AC lives in his own universe and is allowed to be as strong as I can make him, as long as every card in the deck is a land or says the word land on it. I have my own personal restriction on that. So as long as it has no banned cards, I'm fine with AC being a Bracket 4.
Do people think that you can't have a theme in your commander deck if it's Bracket 3? Like, is that something else? Like, I feel like we've talked about having Bracket bracket two and bracket three decks that are built around themes, and there are people in the comments that go, oh, it's on a bracket three if you have a theme or something like that.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Don't tell me what my brackets are. I know what my brackets are for my deck.
Yeah.
There's my box isn't on my face either.
Oh,
I'm
you're
realizing.
Not focused yeah. now? I clicked it before, I swear. What else were we talking about?
We were talking about the Katara and the brackets and how we can't really tell anything apart from anything anymore.
Well, I can. Speak for yourself.
No, I'm putting words in your mouth.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Yeah, Katara, that's enough. You want to talk about another card?
Yeah, let's move on. This one's going to sound weird, but we should talk about City of Traders.
Oh, okay, yeah. This is the last card that you don't own for real in Itali as of right now?
Correct, yes. And I insanely need it now so bad. I think I want to get one in Atlanta. I think I'm just going to get one, yeah.
Dude, the card's awesome.
It is. And I slept on this card for so long.
In Itali specifically, you only need two turns of mana.
Even outside of Itali, like I just put it in my Timna Malcolm deck that I put together. Having another way to make two mana on turn one is just so mind-blowingly powerful, and it's scary to have it as your first land in a deck that wants to play the long game. But if it's making you more mana or giving you access to card advantage so that you can make up for the deficit of mana, I think that it's worth the initial push into the early game. Like the other day, I got to go City of Traders into Arcane Signet, and even then, I feel like that's enough, but I had a Sol Ring to follow that up then with even.
Incredible,
then, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like a way to get a Talisman on turn one in a deck that plays 3 Talismans, 4 Talismans, and Grim Monolith, I feel like City of Traders is a card I should have been playing for years and everything.
I think, honestly, and the price does keep it at bay a little bit, but this is CDH we're talking about. We can proxy. I kind of think that if you're playing Ancient Tomb, you probably should consider City of Traders.
Why aren't you? You play an Ancient Tomb.
Basically, every deck is playing Ancient Tomb. And
exactly.
Like, I get it. The sacrificing, it does suck. But like you said, as long as you are casting spells that gain you cards or mana, I think it's okay if you lose it because you're just going to gain the stuff back anyway.
Even if you think of it as a 4-mana ritual or 4 mana over the course of 2 turns, I think that's still like a super powerful boost of mana to have at any point in the game.
I think it's worth it to skip a land drop essentially for that, because that's kind of what you have to do with this card is effectively at one point you basically skip a land drop. But 4 mana over the course of 2 turns to me is worth skipping a land drop.
Or think about it this way, it's like a dark ritual. Because you used your land drop
like
to make
ritual.
You 2 additional mana.
Kind of.
And then you got to do the same thing on your next turn because it makes you 2 mana and you get your land drop still.
Right. Now, like, there obviously are terrible situations where shit doesn't work out, where you play this into Arcane Signet, into Mystic Grimoire, you don't find the lands.
My
Rhystic
Study got countered, and now I'm not going to get the benefit of getting this back.
But
yeah.
I agree with you that it's worth the risk in a lot of decks, a lot more decks that play. Now, like, I'm saying that, like, I don't play it in Sissei because Sissei really needs the pips. And although I do play Ancient Tomb in Sissei, I haven't played City of Traders in Sissei.
Are you? What other colorless lands are you on in Sissei?
Just Ancient Tomb?
You're not on Deserted Temple as like another way to untap
not in
Cradle?
Sissei, no. I am in Cradle, which is just the green.
But everything else makes a pip.
Everything else makes a
pip.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense.
Besaidu and Odawara are one pip ones.
But they still make pips. Yeah, that makes sense. I would still play Ancient Tomb over City of Traders.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think now at least in my rankings where like I had Emergence Zone or Talon Gates of Madara like as my normal second colorless source in a deck, just for like tech, I now feel like fuck those cards. If I'm in blue, I especially want City of Traders because I have other ways to get Flash.
It's good with Malcolm, too. Helps you cast the Malcolm. And then Malcolm, the next turn, makes you the treasure, which kind of covers the land drop that you miss, right?
Exactly, yeah. Like, it just provides so much value, again, at any point in the game as, like, an extra ritual to help you power out things that just you need to get out way quicker. Because Esper's so slow. I feel like you just need every tool that you can.
Yeah, and honestly, especially in like decks that can actually like use the going to the graveyard aspect of it, like Ad Nauseam decks that are big on Breach, and I want an extra card in my graveyard anyway. That's awesome. Lumra decks that want the land sacrifice so that Lumra can bring it back anyway. That's incredible. There are certain decks that can like really make City of Traders feel insane, and then most other decks would probably use it just fine.
Yeah, honestly, Lumra is another card that I put on the list.
Oh yeah, we should talk about
something
Lumra
that I want to talk about because I don't know how much we've actually gotten to talk about Lumra on the channel as the like a commander in CEDH deck.
It feels powerful to me. I think it's powerful.
Yeah, it feels like it needs a little bit of time to set up because it needs a lot of pieces because the way that Lumra works is that you essentially want to be using Lumra's Enter the Battlefield trigger to mill the entirety of your deck and then loop your lands in between play and your graveyard. And now how do you do that? Well, we need a couple things, right? We need something that sacrifices our lands.
Yeah, Sylvan Safekeeper or
Zurin Orb.
Zurin Orb, fun.
Which is fucking awesome.
Which is great
because
as you get the Lumra trigger, you mill the cards, the lands want to come back, but in response to the trigger, you can sacrifice all of your lands, which would make Lumra die, and then all those lands would come back because of the Lumra trigger.
And then if you have something that lets lands come into play untapped, like Amulet of Vigor, Spelunking, or any of these other cards that we got from, like, Edge of Eternities that does this,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that plays all of them, especially, like, Lotus Cobras and Nissa's, too. Anything that makes a mana when lands come in does also do the same thing.
Exactly, yeah, so that way you can recast Lumra, and then you get to a point where, I mean, you kind of do need to find an untapper because eventually, like, once you do get through your whole deck, like, you will start to need, like, Command Beacon to put Lumra back into your hand.
Right, yeah.
So that when you recast Lumra, you can keep going. Or one of my favorites is Mirror Maid.
Mirror Pool
is the name of the land.
Makes a copy of a card in your graveyard?
Of a card in play.
Yeah,
so you can, like, make a token copy of Lumra that just dies and then gives you another Lumra trigger, and then when Mirror Maid comes back, bada bing, bada boom, you can just do it again.
The deck, it feels like that needs a kind of like a decent amount of things. It needs the land sacker, it needs a Lumra, it needs a bunch of lands.
And an untapper,
right? So a bunch of lands isn't really anything.
So really it needs two things, the just land sacker and the untapper.
Everything in the deck is either a land or one of those two things, or a Lotus Cobra, which is like half of a land tapper.
It's basically
you to go
one
until
of
you,
those.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, until you find like your next piece
until
you
find yeah you can do something. So
honestly, what you find is the 4-mana Eternal Witness that you can get back from your graveyard because you have so much Lotus Cobra mana at that point that's what you use to get back like your Tiller Engine, and that's how you continue your loop.
And what can kind of be cool about like a decent chunk of the lines, specifically like the Mirror Maid ones, is that like there gets to be a moment where Lumra's not casting any more spells. Lumra is just triggering Lumra over and over again, and then eventually there's like the land that when it enters it deals a damage to an opponent or whatever.
The Sunbaked Canyon.
You sack that one in and out, and that's the damage. That's how everyone dies, just by that land going in and out, because even after you've emptied your whole library, it doesn't matter if Lumra can't mill anymore. Lumra is still going to bring all the lands back every time you do a trigger, right?
Exactly. Boop, boop, yeah. Boop. Yeah, exactly. So that's just every time that Lumra hits, whether Lumra's power is 0 because you have 0 lands in play, or Lumra's power is 15 because there's 15 lands in play.
Yeah. So I think the fact that it can avoid a lot of counterspells, normally there's like a moment where you're like, if you count a Lumra here, we're probably good, but there's Cavern of Souls and there's ways to protect the Lumra and shit like that. And oftentimes that just buys you a turn. They say, okay, I'm just going to cast Lumra next turn or something.
Yeah,
right?
It's just like a Tali or something like that. Yeah, except it's way harder to interact with because it's one creature they need to cast and everything else is a land activation.
I have found that it's a little, I don't want to say slow because it can be quick, but it's like a turn 3 deck, not a turn 2 deck. And normally decks that are like monocolored or two color, like all in on the combo decks, they're like turn 2 decks a lot of times.
It's slow for a fast deck,
I would say.
Yeah, because like if I want to compare it to the fastest decks in the formats, what's that? It's like Atali, it's Crick, like it's these decks that are consistently pushing on turn 1 or turn 2 or something like
that,
right? Turn 2 more usually.
I think turn two is the consistent area where the turbo decks can push. Some of them on turn one if they have the God Hand, of course.
But I feel like Lumra's God Hand does not come up as frequently, and Lumra's God Hand is more like a turn two as opposed to a turn one.
Yeah, whereas realistically, I see it like it does like a nudge on turn three and then a full push on turn four. I see that like a couple of times with Lumra where like it'll do something crazy. It'll mill a bunch and it'll pass a turn with 20 lands in play and a bunch of other shit and pass a turn. And everyone goes, we have to kill Lumra right now or their eyes are dead. Or it like full pushes on turn four, but somewhere in turn three. I feel like in that range. And that's like a full, like you said, like a full turn slower than a Tali.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice where I think it sits in the meta too, because it's been doing really well in CEDH tournaments recently. And I think a lot of that is because even a little bit later in like turn four and turn five, people are set up to go for a long game, but they're not set up for a creature, right? Like they have Swords to Plowshares in their hand to deal with a creature, but you wanted Lumra gone anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, like they have Fierce Guardianship and they have Flusterstorm, and you say, I don't care about any of that at all. I'm going to cast my bear again.
I'm a fucking bear. Yeah.
So I think that's great. I think it adds a cool aspect to CDH, that like Amulet Titan feel of like, am I dead? Because you don't know the deck well enough, but they know the deck well enough because they're playing it.
And it's so strong that it's now opened up entirely new tier two and tier three decks into the format with like Wandering Minstrel and Tanux, so that like you can do this in other color combinations that add better win conditions, maybe a different win conditions, I'll say.
And I,
worse in Tanuk, I'll tell you that much.
I can't believe I'm talking about AC twice in a CDH podcast, but it gives me ideas for my casual AC deck, which exists in this weird like bracket four area. So like every time I see Lumra do something crazy, I go, oh man, I wonder if AC could play that. That makes sense. And I try to, you know, I don't know. I think that's fun, that like Lumra has kind of brought in lands a little bit to the forefront of CDH.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. A deck with 53 lands in it, I absolutely love to see in
So sick. Yeah, the fact that like 48, 47 is like the low end of the Lumra deck land cats, I feel like. That's nice.
It's so cool. Man, I love that deck. I love that deck.
What else do you want to talk about? We talked about Emerald Charm already, right? I can't talk about that.
We did talk about Emerald Charm, yeah. I want to talk about a card that I think more decks should be playing instead of Cursed Totem.
Oh, okay. Cursed Totem is an artifact that for two mana, generic, says the ability of creatures can't be activated.
Whereas Drana and Linvala is one, two white and a black. All right, yeah, I understand why. Yeah. But for that cost, you get a 3/4 vampire legendary angel that has flying and vigilance, and it says activated abilities of creatures your opponents control can't be activated, and Drana and Linvala has the activated abilities of all creatures your opponents control, and you can spend mana as though it were mana of any color to activate those abilities.
This card slaps.
This card freaking slaps.
This card is 4 mana. And doesn't do anything when it comes in.
That is the problem, yeah. However, you can, like, beseech the mirror this into play, though, too. Like, there's ways that you can get this into play, like...
Still for 4 mana.
Still for 4 mana, but arguably, it's easier to find 3 black than 2 white and a black, I think.
It is pretty... I don't want to say lights out entirely, but it's pretty lights out against certain strategies. Against... You found out the other day, I believe, that it's pretty good against Tyum.
There was a wild stack where I kind of forgot that this card was in my Timna Malcolm deck.
Yeah.
And Tyum had to put 4 Tyum activations on the stack. The way that the pod had to deal with Tyum was just like, why don't we just like keep casting spells and just keep trying to interact and just keep jamming shit.
If you win over top of the time trigger, you don't have to think about what the time is doing.
So like, so Tyum was just like, all right, well, that's fine. Everything you do, I can respond to.
Because
they had... Gaia's Cradle, Deserted Temple, and Creature Gaia's Cradle, too. The Circle of Dreams Druids. So it was just counters we had to fight through.
Yeah.
So by the time they got to, like, no more counters, when we got through the last one, I had already cracked my Emergent Zone, and I fucking forgot that this card was in my deck, so I beseeched the mirrored for it. It comes into play at that point, and Tyum's like, all right, well, now it doesn't matter what I get back, because I can't continue to Tyum after this. So it ended up working out insanely well, and then now I get the Circle of Dreams druid ability.
Oh.
But what made me put this in the deck in the first place is that I've been seeing a lot of, like, Malcolm Timna and Blue Farm decks that do well in tournaments playing Cursed Totem,
oh,
but
yeah.
It's kind of a non-bow with Ranger Captain Destin of Eos, which is like one of the best cards that I can be playing, especially if I'm purposefully hurting myself by not playing Crown in the command zone specifically. Like, I want to maximize the value of all of my cards. And I was like, I might as well play Dalthy Voidwalker because I hate myself.
Yeah.
So I put Drana and Linvala in. And what I think I really, really, really like it.
By the time I took Blood Pod apart, this was like one of my favorite cards in the deck. It is such a powerful card, especially if you're trying to slow the table down. It's so good.
That's the thing. Yeah, because like Tim the Malcolm is like having a hard time finding ways to close out the game. So I feel like I don't want a stacks piece per se.
It helps you win the game. It gives you the Kinnan activation, the Sisay activation.
The Thrasios activation, right? But then it also like taps to also give me the Bloom Tender activation for my own Thrasios activation that it also then gets while also drawing me a card with Timna because it has Vigilance and Flying too. So like I feel like it's just perfect for Timna. It's perfect for when I'm still trying to fish for whatever my win is going to be. And instead of playing Curse Totem, I don't know. Like I feel like I
see it, dude. I get it.
I feel like maybe it is better for me in Timna Malcolm because I'm not on Ad Nauseam. I'm on Necro, but I'm not on Ad Nauseam and I'm trying to play slower.
And for your play style in particular, because I feel like you as a player do not want any cards that don't synergize well together. You like don't want anything you don't want anything that can bite you in the ass. And I think for the most part, I agree with you. For like, especially for if you're doing a deck that's going slow, you want your top decks to be good. You don't want to draw Curse Totem when you have Ranger Captain. You're like, no, the Ranger Captain is important to the strategy right now. This card sucks, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's a little bit different when like you have the option to go fast,
right?
And like you can like kind of play around what the game is like, oh, this one's gonna go fast, so I can just like play Ranger Captain on turn two, crack Ranger Captain for my turn three win.
Out of these seven cards, two of them don't synergize well, but I only need four of them to win, so I don't need three of them anyway, right?
But like Tim the Malcolm doesn't have that luxury. Because the game goes longer, every card that I see is going to come up in more situations and has more opportunities to impact the game. And the more opportunities they have to impact the game, the more opportunities I'm giving myself to dissynergize my deck together.
Yeah. You know what's kind of funny? So I have always found Theft in Commander to be actually pretty powerful of a strategy. Taking your opponent's stuff, I think, is overall can be very powerful. And recently in Commander, I feel like we have found that stuff like Steel Enchantment and Mirror Maid and Copy Enchantment can be really good. And Gilded Drake historically was always good in Commander. But the issue is the rate. That's still the issue with Drana Linvala, is that the 4 mana is a pretty high rate, but the effect is super powerful. Like, if Steel Enchantment is good, it kind of only makes sense that something like Drana and Linvala would be pretty good because it effectively does steal all of the activated ability stuff that your opponents have. It steals all of that shit.
That's the thing. So as long as what you're getting is good, I think that that's good.
But when it's a dead card and you're playing against Rog'Sai and, I don't know, two other decks that don't give a shit about it, I have a 4-drop that it's a 4-drop and it doesn't do anything. That can be terrible, right?
Yeah, and at that point, I'm just like, well, I'm just playing into my strengths, which are the long game, and which is something else I feel like I need to get better at in all of the games that I play in general. I need to get better at min-maxing on things instead of just like trying to make sure that I'm overall covered for everything. I think Itali has kind of helped me out with that, but I feel like what I would like to do with a lot of characters in a lot of video games is like I realize what their weakness is, and I feel like I have to give them items to patch up their weaknesses.
Yeah.
Whereas I could be making the characters better by instead giving them items to make their strengths even stronger.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday, I feel like, right? Or last week, or whenever the podcast
was. Or in a month from now.
We talked about this in a month from now. Yeah, where it's better to join them, don't beat them.
Oh, no, that we did talk about last week.
That was last week. Okay, where it's just, rather than try to cover the weakness, make it so good that the weakness doesn't come up very often.
Exactly.
That's kind of similar. Like, don't fix the problem, work on the strength.
Yeah, lean into your strengths.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think a lot of times that can be super helpful.
Yeah. That's just good life advice in general.
I think so too. Yeah. Are we life coaches now?
I think we are.
That's all you need to do, right? Have an audience and then tell people what to do.
So there was,
I hope no one's a life coach.
No. I just remember there was this guy on The Bachelorette who showed up and he was 25 and he was a life coach.
Oh,
and that made me realize that like anyone can do that.
You don't have any experience at all.
You know, what are you gonna tell me? Like,
That's so funny.
Maybe he just checks your Tinder profile and then they were like, we can't call him a Tinder profile checker on the show. Like, call him a life coach. Oh, there we go.
If you are a life coach,
please tell me how wrong I am.
Yeah, let me know how life coaching is as a real job.
Yeah.
What else?
So I might need one.
Do we have any more cards? We're going to talk about one more card.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about one more card. Let's talk about one that I also put in Timna Malkuim that I haven't cast yet. And I've seen in other decks, and I haven't seen it cast, but it seems cracked, right? Like, Lively Dirge is cracked, right?
Lively Dirge might be cracked.
I think so, right? It's one in a black for a sorcery with Spree, which means that it's more than just one in a black. If you pay an extra one mana, you get to search your library for a card and put it into the graveyard and then shuffle.
Any card.
Any card.
I should put this in the fucking Spider-Man deck.
You didn't?
No.
I thought you did.
I gotta make one more swap. Is Lively Dirge in there?
In the Sensational Spider-Man?
I didn't put it in.
I proxied a Lively Dirge, and I don't know if that's...
In your mono black deck, maybe.
Because I did put Lively Dirge in the mono black deck.
I gotta make one more swap. Yeah. I gotta put this in the blue black. Okay, no, that sounds good.
Yeah, I really want this in that deck, yeah. So it's a 3-mana Entomb, which sucks when you say it like that, especially because it's a sorcery. But for an additional 2 mana then, you can also use it to return up to 2 creature cards with total mana value 4 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
That's pretty good.
Which is pretty good, yeah. Which makes this a 5-mana get any 4-drop from your deck out into play, or get any 2... No, that is what that is. It's 5-mana get any 4-drop from your deck into play right now.
Or if there's also a 2-drop in your graveyard, you can get the 4-drop from your library and the 2-drop?
No, because it's total mana value 4. Total mana value 4. So if you entomb a 2-drop and the other 2-drop you need is already in the graveyard, though, you can get 2 2-drops into play.
Yeah.
It's like another way to just sneak in Draenei and Limvala if I need to. Like, I'm weirdly playing a lot of 4-drops in this deck.
You have Talion also?
Talion, Draenei and Limvala.
Instant Speed Fairy?
High Fae Trickster, and Phyrexian Metamorph.
Yeah.
And probably one more. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a 5th one in
Metamorph is
there.
A 3-drop, though.
Then there's probably one more that I'm playing. I just don't remember it off the top. Rev, Tithe Extractor.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's so good that she makes me forget my Timna triggers. Don't ask questions about that. But... what were we talking about? Lively Dirge. Yeah,
like that looked like that was fake, what you just did. That looked like... you were trying to think about what we're talking about? I don't know why that looked like it was fake.
Like someone in the movie hacking into the system.
Yeah. Lively
That's
Dirge.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to Tim about this card a while ago, and he goes, Lively Dirge is really good because I put it on the stack, and people go, what is that, a shitty Entomb? Yeah, it's a shitty Entomb. Okay, well... on the stack, it's just Entomb. Yeah, it's sorcery speed and 3 mana, but like when it's on the stack, it being it still is Entomb. It still is the effect.
It still
right?
does what you want. And there's outside of, I guess, Unmarked Grave does this, but you can't find just like any old card.
Unmarked Grave is specifically a non-legend.
Yeah, so like you can't find Draenei and Limvala when you need to.
This card can find a big thing and it can't reanimate it, but it can just Entomb Vilas into the graveyard. The issue, I feel like, strategies that need Entomb are normally, I guess, maybe not very great. But the fact that this is also like an Eldritch Evolution, not at all, but like a search your library for a creature and put it right into play, not cast it, right into play.
You're getting a mana cost reduction if you find a 4-drop, because instead of like Demonic Tutoring, you're spending 5 mana on your 4-drop instead of having to spend 6 mana on the Demonic Tutor and then your 4-drop.
You don't have to announce a target, right? There's no target on
cast.
No,
they have no idea what you're getting.
So like you could have something good in the graveyard. You can like do something. I'm going to pop my Dothi here. I've got a way to get it back later. You pop the Dothi, and then on your turn, you Lively Dirge, and they go, oh, they're getting the Dothi back. And you go, I'm going to go to my library, and I'm going to get this other thing instead, right? Do you know what I mean?
There's no targets for the second part of the ability. So after Lively Dirge resolves, what makes this good is that you found Grand Abolisher,
right.
And then Grand Abolisher just shows up in play after they went, oh, I don't care about Lively Dirge.
Right, yeah.
This card's busted.
Yeah,
oh my God,
I
love
this.
I think
this card's good. I should slip this into a few more decks.
Yeah, this does seem really good like that. Like, you were right about the Eldritch Evolution thing. Like, you get to play those mind games where people think you're just going to go get something good for you. Nope, Ranger Captain of Eos.
Yeah,
and then...
you go, oh, Dothi Voidwalker's still my graveyard. Okay, cool. Cast Lively Dirge. And then go, all right, he's getting Dothi back. No. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's fun.
Dude, you get to do a Who Said That by just like talking about another card that's in your graveyard.
Look at your graveyard, cast Lively Dirge. And then go, you know.
Oh, that's cool. My Esper Sentinel's here. Yeah. Lively Dirge.
Yeah, exactly.
Who said that? 5 mana for it. Yeah.
5 mana Esper Sentinel. 5 mana Grand Abolisher.
I mean,
fine.
That's expensive, though. Like, a 5 mana Grand Abolisher is a lot. But, like, this is a good late in the game kind of a card where, like, you've had your Smothering Tithe, your Lotho get you a lot of advantage where, like, you can present a win after that.
I think this card is awesome and a little bit slept on, and I'm probably going to go slip it into that Superior Spider-Man list that I made. That's a reanimator list. I'm going to put that one there. I don't think it goes into It doesn't go in Terra, does it? Could it go in Terra?
Let me think. Let's think about that. What do you want to entomb so bad in Terra?
Nothing, really. There's
Do you play entomb in Terra?
You got to already be playing entomb, maybe, right? For to be good? For this card
to
be good?
You know what? I'm not on entomb in Tim to Malcolm.
Because sometimes you just want the search ability.
This is kind of just like a tutor for me in Tim to Malcolm.
Like, if maybe I wonder if I put Blood Pod back together, if I would play something like this. As another way to just get the silver bullet when I need to, or go get a Kiki Jiki when I don't win the game or something. No, can't get a Kiki Jiki, terrible example, but you understand what I mean.
As long as what you're getting is not just a two drop, you are saving mana on this at all times, or at least netting even as if this would be a demonic tutor.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have the flexibility of you being able to demonic tutor and then keep that card in your hand. However, anytime you demonic tutor and then pass the turn, you are looked at as the threat.
Right.
So anytime you have Lively Dirge, you will not be looked at as the threat.
Yeah, that's very true.
Maybe that's because it's bad, but I think that there's enough upside that we've talked about here that I kind of want to try this card in more decks.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. There's a couple of specialties for it. If you're already playing Entomb, I think this one's very considerable. If you want to get things like Grand Abolisher and Thassa's Oracle and Talion or whatever. If you want to get both a win condition or protection or value or like a silver bullet, like your Tim to Malcolm deck does, if it has the flexibility of doing all of those things, I think you're in a really good spot.
Yeah, I think so too. So try Lively Dirge out and let me know what you think of it in the comments in a couple weeks after you've tried it out in a lot of CEDH games and you've played at least 30 games with Lively Dirge, and then that's how we'll know.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay, yeah. You may be excused.
Okay, I'm done now. You want to talk about anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. Thanks so much for watching. If you want to pick us up... No. Thank you. Thank you so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Dam Nandez, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Mr. Jerby, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man 089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spengler, Demetrius, Clark Lesson, Roy, Zorboy, Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, Gabriel Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Noosh, Quaja A. Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thanks, Dragonship, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5%. Off.
Follow us on the internet for more content.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time.
Jason Brooks, Sepharius, Ash Wayne, Hunter the Warlock, John Koba, The Gaming Kinkajou, Sarcastic, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Dalton Poti, Justin Yan, Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.